Welcome to Business of Wholesaling Podcast. I'll be sitting down with REI and wholesaling industry leaders to talk market insights and elicit step-by-step tactics and growth strategies to amplify your sales, operations, and marketing.
All right, James. So you've been a realtor for 9 years. Did you start as a realtor coming into real estate investing or wholesaling, or did you learn kind of about wholesaling and investing and then thought your entry point would be good as a realtor?
Yeah, so I became a real estate agent 9 years ago, and it wasn't until about almost 2 years ago that I started doing wholesaling, right? And I just did like light dabbling in it. So a couple of my friends told me about it. They were doing some fix and flip and wholesale. I'm like, what is wholesale? They're like, well, you make an offer on a house and then you basically sell the paper. I'm like, you make an offer on the house and you sell the paper and you can make $5, $10, $15, $20, $100,000. So like, yeah. I'm like, well, why don't you just take down the deal yourself? And they're like, well, I don't know, why not just move the paper real quick, let them take on the work, or we'll take down the deal if we want to. Like, yeah. So I was trying to convert my team over that for a little bit, and it just wasn't happening. And finally, I started following some people, and I was like, okay, I need to maybe jump into this. I met a guy here in town. He's 19 years old, right? He started talking to me about what he was doing for wholesaling. He's like, hey, I have this coach and this and that, and he's down in Phoenix. And I was like, well, take a look at him, right? So just before I was about to spend like 50 grand on one-on-one, I decided to go with this other program for like 5,000 bucks, right? And I was like, well, I get to go down to Phoenix. This guy's reputable and whatnot. Totally changed my time, right? With him, which was Brent Daniels. So I did that with Brent Daniels.
Yeah.
After that, I just kind of got the bug. I got to see how his team worked, and I was like, okay, I think we got this, right? And then one of my really good buddies decided, dude, I want to do wholesale with you. Like, I've wanted to do real estate. This is wholesale that I want to do. I was like, okay, cool. And then we had one other partner. You know, she helped get some things running, and then we quickly realized that, like, I was taking down the acquisitions, he was doing the disposition and taking down some deals too. She was writing the contract and she had left for like a vacation. And I'm like, you know, I think we can do this ourselves or whatnot, or we just need to restructure this, right? Well, we tried to restructure it and then she ended up leaving and now we're doing well. Like, it's fun, right? It's just the two of us at this point in time. I mean, we have like virtual assistants and cold callers and stuff like that, but it's just him and I running it. And honestly, it's not that hard. It's hard to get the business.
Yeah.
And it's expensive to get the business. To get up and going was about 100 grand, to be completely honest. When you're spending everything that you can on the list and you think about that, like 100 grand, it was just crazy. So anyways, it costs a lot to get going.
Yeah.
And we ended up pushing through with the properties that I bought myself and the wholesaling that we've done. We've made over $500,000 so far and that's only since February, right? That we've made over $500,000. So we probably, with equity and everything that we have in the houses that we bought and fixed up, we're right about probably 600 to 700,000. But it took 100 grand to get going.
That's incredible, especially over like since February. So like you've come into it at the thick of it, right? It's not like you were kind of spoiled and came into it a few years ago when it was hot and ready to go. Like you've come into it at the thick of it.
Well, I came at the very tail end of it, right? So I was picking up the scraps as it was going, but I was like converting this. I'm like, damn, this is awesome. And it's helping my real estate team. And I'm like, I called a guy from a website lead that I got. And he goes, I'm like, oh, so you want to sell this house? And I'm like, how about I offer you 180, right? And I just threw it out there because I was like tired of dealing with like nickel and diming and whatnot. He's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, oh my God, that's like a 100 grand spread right there. I didn't think you would actually do that. But I just started getting more confident with it, right? So there was about 100 grand spread. We ended up selling. We made 80 grand on that, right? Because we had a guy that's been buying a lot of deals for us. So we made it. I'm like, dude, I just made 80 grand on one phone call, one contract. And this other guy's going to take it as fix and flip. The guy that we bought it from, the seller, was super happy that we did it because he had talked to other people and just didn't feel comfortable. And we got it done. And he was like super grateful at the end of it. I'm like, this is odd, right? So usually what I do, because I'm a real estate agent and I want to feel moral and ethical about it, is I'll tell people what the price is on the market that they could get. And I'm like, hey, why do you want to take a 100 grand hit? Like, why do you want to do it? So like, well, because of XYZ. I'm like, have my real estate team give you a chance that we can get this done. No. Well, I'll take the cash deal. You know, I just want out. I don't want to do the showings. I don't want to do it. That happened with another deal, like a fix and flip. So I call my virtual assistant, right, from the Philippines, calls her and sends it over to me. And I'm like, this is a really good deal. I'm like, 225, really? So I call her. She's like, yeah, I just want 225. I was like, okay, can I come see the house today? She's like, no, next week. I'm like, how about tomorrow? Like, if today it doesn't work, how about tomorrow? No, next week. That's what we need. I was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. No, I don't want to wait a week, right?
Yeah.
End up having to wait a week. I meet her. I'm like, holy crud, this house could be worth like pretty close to 500 grand, right? So I told her that. I'm like, why don't, in the condition that it's in, like, we could list it for 300 and you could get it sold. She's like, no, I don't want to do the showings. I don't want to do the repairs. And honestly, I want time to clean it out and whatnot. And if you're willing to give that to me, I'll sell it to you for 225. I sold it to me for 225. I didn't even list it. I just put it out there to my team members. I got an offer at 475. It came in at 450, and I was probably in it a total of maybe 300,000, maybe. Like,
wow,
pretty close. Probably we put about 55 into that. So you're at 280, you sell for 450. And I was like, this is crazy, right? That's just ridiculous. So long story short, that's when I got the bug, and that's when I was like, okay, this could be something pretty awesome. And we had like our kind of departure within our LLC and people going different directions, which I'm happier about now at this point in time. And it's been really, really good. I'm happy with that. And just the investment properties that we were able to pick up, and then converting those leads over into listings as a real estate agent has been pretty incredible as well. So if they don't want to take the wholesale price, and I try to be as honest with people as possible, like, I can get you this price on wholesale, but no better than that. Like, and I'm trying to be completely honest with them, right? But if we list it for you, then we can get you this price for you that you want. A lot of times they're like, yeah, sure, why don't we try both? I'm like, okay, cool, let's try both. And so my team takes over the listing, Andrew takes over the disposition, and then we end up selling it one way or the other. Very, very rarely have we not been able to sell a property. There were two of them that we weren't able to sell, one of which we did. We sold a package of three to this one gal, and she totally flaked on us. We learned some really tough lessons on that, right? So she totally flaked on us, and we ended up going into like almost like a legal battle. And then finally, I just dropped it. We ended up selling one of the properties, two of them. We had a pretty big bummer for the seller. So that was a big learning curve there. But it's just, yeah, wholesale has been interesting. It's been good. It's been hard. It's been, you know, the videos make it seem like it's a little bit easier than what it is in terms of like, oh yeah, you get in and you start calling people and this and that. Like, if you're a real estate agent, yeah, that's totally fine. Like, you can type real estate retail into wholesale, and I think it's the best thing in the world, right? But if you're just going to do wholesaling, I think that you have to do so many calls or invest so much in a cold calling that it's a bigger undertaking than what you think it's going to be, especially right now, right? Because in our areas, like, you're in Canada and Toronto,
yep,
and then I'm in Prescott, like, our prices skyrocketed and our sellers haven't yet adjusted to that pricing yet. So we're just sitting here giving calls and saying, hey, your property's not worth this. Your property's not worth this. Your property's not worth this. Even on the MLS, it wouldn't be worth this, right? So we need to get it down to this. Lead saturation, I mean, like, the leads that have come in have been rougher to convert, right? A lot harder, because we're not just going to take something and tell somebody that we can get their house sold. We did that once or twice and thinking, hey, maybe we can get this going, like any real estate agent is doing 7 months ago with getting a listing. And we ended up hurting two people's feelings pretty bad. And one of them was in tears. And we said, never again will we do that. We're just going to be completely upfront. The market's changed. There's no give in this anymore. Yeah. So we're going to hit it. So it's been more difficult, right? And there's a lot more competition, but you can outwork them at this point. But you got to do a lot of work for it. So currently right now, I have 1, 2 cold callers. Andrew, if you count him, myself would be number 4 for that. And then we have a text message person as well. And then we have an ISA also. They're not calling like 8 hours a day, right? They're calling 3, 4. Myself is calling an hour. Andrew's maybe calling an hour. Then we have our text messenger doing like 3 to 4 hours a day. What's nice about that is all that data that they're going through, they're scrubbing it for listing and wholesale leads at the same time.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting you say that. Like, there is this cognitive dissonance between like seller's expectation and reality right now. Like, everybody's still like playing in this review mirror, being like, well, my neighbor just sold their house. You know, they listed at 350 and got 380 for it, you know, 18 months ago. Why can you only give me 250 for my house right now? And yeah, it's unfortunately, it's just, it is definitely the reality of things. So I want to kind of take on to what you're just talking about there with cold calling your team. Why do you guys only cold call for like certain hours at a time? Is it like a quality of life thing, or have you guys just found like specific times are work best?
So there's definitely specific times work best, right? And that's going to be from like 4 to 8 p.m. for the most part. Mm. And maybe it might be like 4 to 7 p.m. Most of my people will call like early in the morning, like me and Andrew, just because we have jobs and family. So we can't, like, I can't do that at night. Like, okay, my kids want me, I want them, you know, and my wife and whatnot. And then I only have my staff do 4 hours a day. Because if they're doing eight, like, who can cold call for 8 hours a day? Like, four is pretty much max. And I think you just lose, it's like anything, right? Like you have your up, like you're doing really well. And then all of a sudden you're like, damn, this sucks. Okay, I got one more hour. This is just, I'm just going to crash. And like, you know, then you get wasted hours at that point. Like four is the maximum that you're going to get out of somebody that's going to be productive, in my opinion. And I've done it myself and I'm a very, very motivated, like, go-getter person. Like if I want something, I'm going to go after it now. And I could only ever really get to 4 hours. And I was like, this sucks. I don't want to burn myself out for the next couple of days. So I don't do that in staff.
I was talking to Eric Brewer not too long ago, and that was exactly his mentality as well. It was like, people very much discount lead acquisition and very much discount things like cold calling and texting and stuff because it's just a numbers game. It's like lottery, looking for the best number. The point being, like, it's not. Like, if you put as much attention and quality on the outbound, on your lead acquisition, as you do with the leads that come into your pipeline and go to your so-called closer, you know, you could literally just double acquisitions by focusing on that.
Yeah.
And just having a better quality of lead come in and having stronger conversations on the front end because your cold caller is not, you know, it doesn't have 300 lines going for 8 hours a day. They might as well be just a robot.
For sure, a robot, right? And you can definitely have like more cold callers. You can have them calling for longer periods of time. My operation, I don't necessarily want to get that big at this point in time. I don't want to put that much money into it. My kids are young. And so if I'm making $1 million a year, I'm okay with that because I pretty much have no debt. I have a really, really good passive income. So I'm just kind of cruising right now and enjoying it. And, you know, I've implemented the systems and can be stuff that's going to break. Like it always happens, right? Like I sold 183 homes myself as a real estate agent. I did 318 with my team. Like that was, those are some pretty good numbers, but I've gotten to a point where I'm not going to work as hard in this market right now for, I'm not going to work three times as hard for the same results. And I really don't know if you could even get the same results right now because there's buyer sentiment, there's the interest rates, there's people leaving the market, there's people losing their shorts on deals. So there's just, there's sometimes where you pull back and you breathe, right? And I haven't been able to breathe for a while. So you pull back, you breathe, you realign, you reassess what you want to do, and you just, you start sharpening the axe, right? Like Abraham Lincoln said, like I'll sharpen my axe for half the time and chop for half the time. If he's chopping the entire time, I'm going to beat him, right? There's a certain analogy, and I don't remember the exact story right now, but right now we're sharpening our axe while still doing a little bit of chopping, right? And we're doing well. We got two deals under contract yesterday, and our real estate team sold 26, 28. We got about 20 under contract for December. So we're kind of cruising right along, but there's a time to breathe and take that time, enjoy it, spend it with your family, sharpen your axe, and get some you time in at that point in time, you know? So
I think that's super powerful. I don't think enough people do it. Enough, everybody pushes. And sometimes it's like, totally agree with you, what you're saying. Like sometimes there's just a cycle going on and you just like the best thing you can do is just kind of ride the wave and just kind of wait for this cycle to close and see what's going to happen next. So
yeah. And one thing I do want to add into that is like, that doesn't mean you stop, right? That just means that I'm making adjustments and maybe slowing down a little bit and looking at things a little bit differently now that I have that time to look, but I'm not stopping. I'm still going. I'm just not going as hard. And I think if you completely stop, like don't take this advice to stop. If anybody, like whoever's listening to this, that's saying instead of working 10 hours a day, maybe work 5 hours a day or 4 hours a day, you know? And that's on your business and then work another 2 hours on like research and analyzing, talking to people like yourself about PPC and other lead sources, redo your budgets, look at your P&L, see what you're missing, see where there's holes in your business.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great point. Yeah. We're going through a big hiring phase right now. We certainly wouldn't be able to do that if we're doing a huge push on marketing or something. So yeah, I think that's super powerful to mention that.
Yeah.
I'd like to interrupt this podcast for just 1 minute to tell you about the sponsor, which is LeadZolo. LeadZolo is a company that I co-own with my business partner and am the CEO of. And LeadZolo, we provide the hottest, highest converting off-market seller leads possible. for real estate investors and wholesalers who are looking to scale their businesses. Now, LeadZolo, we use a marketing channel that nobody else is using. This isn't Google Ads or Facebook Ads or cold callers or anything like that. We use YouTube because nobody else has mastered YouTube the way that we have. Now, we've proven our leads to be the highest converting at events such as Wholesaling Live, where you can look up some videos of RJ Bates closing a $100,000 deal on stage, as well as the 25 leads that we provided where 5 deals were made and we had a 20% conversion rate with. So if you're interested in getting the highest converting leads possible, then go to LeadZolo, LeadZolo.com and book a call with somebody on my team to see if it's right for you. That's LeadZolo, LeadZolo.com.
What does your business look like right now? So what are you mostly focused on? Like, I guess my question isn't very clear, but you're a realtor doing wholesaling. You've now mixed that in. Plus you like buy and holding. So is there like, do you look at every deal through one lens and then shift over to one or the other? Are you pretty agnostic where things fall as long as, you know, you can find a good deal and, you know, provide a good service to a seller? Or are you like really eager to get to a certain amount of properties held? Or are you trying to get out of listing and just want a wholesale? Or how does that look for you?
Yeah, dude, that's a really, really great question. So I'm actually started a coaching program as well for real estate agents to, it's called Financially Free Realtor and Masters in Real Estate. And my goal is to help real estate agents get financially free within a certain amount of time, right? Because I think that if you're in real estate, there's absolutely no reason if you're pushing at it that you shouldn't be financially free in 10 years. There's no reason, like absolutely no reason. But I have gone from being the number one agent in the country for Better Homes and Gardens, which is like a 20,000 agent thing, and number 463 in the nation, something like that, to getting in a wholesale, to look to doing some hard money lending, and now coaching. So I love real estate, right? But I want to find a better balance of like, okay, where can I still make really good money, still be impactful, still find a passion and go forward? So right now, use the word agnostic. What do you mean by agnostic real quick? Like,
does it matter to you? Like, do you like have a preference over to one strategy or another? Or are you just kind of happy to have multiple tools and use whatever?
No, I love having multiple tools. I love it. If I could have done this in the beginning and I would have understood this and I would have had somebody to mentor me, my net worth would be probably double or at least like 50% more than what it is now, you know? Like, it would just 50% more. Yeah. So like 15 million, right? So, and that would be easy. So I love having all these tools in my belt because here's the thing, Drew, what I do now is I list homes with my real estate team and I'll do it myself. I do wholesale contracts, right?
Yeah.
I lend people money. So I have a couple $1 million saved up that I lend out and I make about $100,000 a year doing that, which is really nice. I developed a company with my neighbor down the street for private money. And then I do coaching as well. So I like having, I like having all of that and it all feeds into something that makes me happy. And if one thing drops and I can pick up the other, I think the more I'm going to listen to Alex Ramosi's interview with Brandon Mulrennan again, one more time, because I do think that if you stick to one thing long enough, then you'll be super successful ultimately. But I'm at a point, so I don't want to stray people away from, hey, do a shotgun approach, right? Because it works for me because I have the money and the passive income that I can do that. And there's more room for error, right? So because I've set myself up, it took a long time to do that and a lot of sacrifices, but I set myself up to be able to do something like that. So that works for me because of the position that I'm in, right? But it may not work for everybody else. In order to be super successful, you have to hyper-focus. So when I was early in my real estate career, I would watch every single YouTube video on prospecting, where to find clients. I would look at it, Craigslist first thing at night, first thing in the morning, in the afternoon, Facebook Marketplace, all these for for sale by owners. I'd drive the neighborhoods, I'd door knock. I did everything. Like, that was my life, right? Like, my friends like, hey, do you want to go shooting? Do you want to go to the gym? Do you want to, like, the only thing I do is play basketball, right? And then hang out with my wife. Otherwise, I didn't really do anything else because I was so driven into that. I didn't even get to listen to music for a few years. Like, and now I do. Now I get to in my car, and that's pretty cool. I miss that. But my point to that is you have to stay really focused for a while and get really good at something in order to be in the position where you can do the wholesale, do the lending, do all this. Because if you try that too soon to spread yourself like that, you're going to lose focus, right? But if you understand each of those aspects of it, so for instance, I have a client that we would always give him the good deals, right? Like we would always give him the good fix and flips or rental property deals because we didn't know what wholesaling was, right? And then I learned what wholesaling was. And instead of just giving him the deal and then selling it to him for 150 and then him fixing it up, putting 50 into it and then making 250 on it, I freaking wholesaled it to him, right? And he was pissed at that. And I'm like, dude, sorry, man. Now I understand what this is. I'm marking it up 50 grand. You'll still make 150 grand. It's just not a deal I want to take on. And he was pretty upset. But then I started doing that. And if I would have started that earlier, knew what it was, then I would have been able to make more money. The first time I ever did a lending deal, right? I had a buddy. I found a deal for him on a fix and flip. It was something I didn't want to take on. I was going to Canada and Washington for a while. And so I did the wire transfer in Canada, sent him 250 grand. He paid me back in 6 weeks and I made 12 grand on that deal. I made 12 grand in 6 weeks for sending a wire transfer for a property. And I was like, whoa, this is awesome. Holy crap, right? And then you have your $80,000 assignment fee for wholesale. And you're like, whoa, this is awesome. Like, it's way better than taking it, doing cold calls, getting a listing, managing the listing, having a bunch of agents call you, having your seller call you on a Sunday to talk to you about how somebody farted in their bathroom and it still stinks, right? Like, yep. I don't necessarily want to deal with that. So the worst of them all have, I can't believe I'm going to say this, the worst of them all have been probably being a real estate agent for the most part at this point in time. Probably because I'm a little bit tired of it, or that some of the stuff has gotten a little bit tough to take on working 7 days a week, whereas the other stuff, you really don't have to do that as much. So looking at different avenues. So if I'm leaning towards anything at this point, it's probably coaching, but I won't give up everything just to go into that at this point in time. There's all the other stuff's too much fun and it still makes like a couple hundred grand a year, right? And it just goes like this. I look at all that stuff like a freeway, right? So here's a freeway of real estate. You have five lanes. You have real estate agent. You have wholesale. You have lending. You have fix and flips. You have rentals. And then you have coaching, right? So there's so five lanes. You're on one highway. You could take advantage of all of them if you want to. And all of those pretty much feed into each other to get to one direction, which is financial freedom and just enjoying yourself and going after it. So, yeah.
That's super powerful. I like what you're saying about Hormozy there. I'm not sure what interview you're talking about, but I'm a big Alex fan. Even like the Malcolm Gladwell school of thought, like the 10,000 hours of mastery, like those are all super powerful and important. But I think that to your point that they kind of need to be taken with a grain of salt sometimes, where it's like, yes, if you want to be absolutely masterful, stick to one thing and hyper-focus on it. But it doesn't mean that like, if it means that it's taken away from quality of life, then maybe there is some sort of shift to make. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, oh, I'm a successful agent. Now, the next thing I want to do is wholesaling because I really enjoy learning new things and implementing new things. So if doubling down on being an agent for another 30 years was going to make you unhappy, then that's not the thing that people should be focused on. And I think a lot of people get really stuck in this because there's two sides, right? There's the, I never get my foot off the ground because I'm shiny object syndrome, right? That's a major issue. But then there's the other people who like listen to the Jocko Willing and all of these guys who are like super disciplined and all this stuff, which is important, but it's just like, yeah, okay, to an extent, right? Now you have a successful business. If you can see another way to make a little bit more money and it's enjoyable for you, then do it. And I think that people should be doing that. It's certainly something my business partner and I focus on a lot is like staying in our own lane, making sure a company is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. But then also like evaluating ourselves, being like, how much are we enjoying this journey right now? Is it time to let this one go and sell it or whatever and start the next one? Because we both know that that's what we really like, this whole startup phase of.
Dude, that is really awesome that you're doing that for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a struggle for me because I come the generation before me, or let's say our parents, right? Because you're the same age as me, basically. Mm-hmm. They worked their job for 30 to 50 years, right? And they didn't leave that. So that's the example that we have. And now I'm at a point where I don't have to do that. But my guardian father, who I really look up to and love and was raised by my teenage years, he did that for 30 years, right? And it wasn't until I started getting super successful and started talking to him about like, how did you stay in real estate this long, right? Where he opened up to me and he was like, dude, I wanted to try different things. And that's the reason I became financially free and thought about all the rentals and everything. So he owned 24 doors, right? And then has a great passive income himself. He retired before all my friends' dads that were CEOs and doctors and stuff like that. Like I literally was the poorest kid out of my group of friends, right? But then I got taken in by my guardian family and they were pretty wealthy, right? And then he stopped working at 55, whereas some of my other friends' parents that were maybe 10 years plus after they could retire, and they were doctor CEOs of some good companies and some good practices and stuff. And I was like, bingo, that's what I need to do. I like sales and I'm going to go after it. I had a conversation with him when I was 24 years old, 24. I said, what got you into real estate? He said, I like sales. And if I was going to sell something, I want to make a lot of money. And if I was going to be in that realm, I want to get into investing, and real estate was perfect for that. I dropped out of my master's program at GCU and got my real estate license and hit the ground running, took a break, went and taught English in Taiwan for a couple months, did some backpacking through Thailand and worked on a farm in Montana, then down to Mexico for the Race for a Wounded, come back and settled down, started doing some real estate. And it's worked out really well, but I didn't know that he was burnt out, right? And that he wanted to try other things. When it took him 30 years for the passive income, it took me 5 or 6. And so now I have more options with that. So I'm kind of dabbling in some things and whatnot. But yeah, so to your point, I think it's great that you're taking a mental look often at if you're enjoying this and if you need to switch anything out, because there's definitely different times for different careers and whatnot. So
yeah, and I think that's important too. People don't be super clear, like, what is your goal? Retiring at 55, great. But what does that mean? Like, what do you need to have in the bank at 55 yeah. to retire? And people need to be acutely aware of that. And like, there's nothing wrong. And I know that, you know, every self-help book in the world is going to want to slap me for this. But like, I don't think there's anything wrong with going, here's my big goal. Like, this is what I want in life. And maybe it's crazy and $100 million in the bank and stuff like that. Great. But like, what is a reasonable goal too? Like, what is something that you would be happy with if it means you got to spend every single day waking up with your family and you were looked after financially? Like, what is that number too? And I think that's a number that I got really serious about not too long ago. And it's like, oh, I can look at this point in my life or at X amount of dollars or in X amount of years, I'm totally confident, right? It's not $100 million, right? But it's enough money that I could retire now and live off the interest and make as much as a doctor would make or whatever it might be, right, for each individual person. There's nothing wrong yeah. with having that number and then letting some stress off at that point, right? Like, no. Okay, I'm going to be fine. Do I still love to get to $100 million in the next 10 or 15 years? Absolutely. But it's not deal or no deal. Like, it's not my kid's not going to go to college if I don't. It's not I can't retire if I don't. It's this is an aspirational goal and I can feel good about working towards it and not feel like the world's coming to an end if I don't accomplish it. And I think that a lot of people miss that sometimes.
You are so right, man. I love that. Like, if you can put that as a clip in this video, like with us talking, I think that's so huge because so many people get lost in like, I have to hit this goal. And you know, when I had that freaking realization, I was driving into my subdivision in the country club, about to take a left at the four-way stop to get to my house. And I thought to myself, okay, cool. I made $1.3 million, right? I'm like, that didn't feel much different than making $300,000. And I go, damn, I thought making $1 million a year would feel really cool and be really cool. But coach to be a coach, he was the number one wholesaling coach in the world, right? At one point, or in the nation at one point in time. Mm-hmm. And he got to that accolade. And he said, you know, it was cool. 5 minutes later, it wasn't really that cool. Like, yep. So I have no aspiration to be the number one coach in the world, like be agnostic, right? Like any coach that he just would coach anybody to be a coach to anything. And he said, I have my goals now and I have my plans and I want to live a quiet life. And I think like what you said is if you can wake up every morning and be happy with what you're doing, because you know that you worked really hard for 5-10 years and you made those sacrifices and you can back it off and start enjoying it. Like I saw this quote on Facebook one time and it said, you're not burnt out, you're just doing too much of it. Yeah. Right. So back it off. And so I start backing off of it. I'm like, oh my God, I really do like this. Like, this is cool. Like, I remember how fun this is and whatnot. But I was going so, dude, I would do like 2 listing appointments a day and sometimes 3 or 4 and then get home at like 8-9 o'clock and then have to start at 6 o'clock in the morning. The anxiety and all that started building up. It wasn't at first. It took time, right? And it was little things, right? And if anybody wants to be successful or is successful or just getting to that point, you're going to notice like you're going to start losing little things, right? Like listening to music in your car. And I didn't realize how important that was to me at first until I was like on a trip and I put my phone on airplane mode, listening to a podcast and I just turned on music. I'm like, holy crap, this feels really good. It's like, yeah. Felt really good in my mind and in my body and everything. And then going and playing basketball or my son being like, hey, put down your phone, put down your phone. And then I put down my phone and I'm like, oh, cool. Like, I actually get to play dinosaurs with you right now. Like, this is freaking fun, you know? So just realize, like, there's little subtle things that you're going to lose, right? And always think about your priorities and what they are and what you have set. Because if you have young kids, you only get them for a little bit, right? And eventually they turn to 8-year-olds and they're a little bit more distant. They're not as, like, cuddly. I mean, I think my kids will be, because that's just how we are, right, with them.
Yep.
But generally they're not. So you want to take that time with them and you want to really build that relationship, and you want to make sure, like, your marriage is strong and you want to make sure you're healthy. Dude, I got up to 250 pounds. Like, I'm like generally a big dude, right? Like, I hover right around 220 225, and 6 foot. But to get to 250, and I wasn't really working out at that point, like, I was a chubby monster at that. So I let some stuff go, you know.
Yeah.
And you do that, you get successful, you start eating, or you just completely forget to eat for a day. My wife would be like, hey, would you eat today? I'm like, oh, I haven't eaten. She's like, it's 7 o'clock. You haven't eaten all day. I'm like, no, I forgot. I was so busy, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but I want to tell one other story. So when I started feeling the pressure a lot, I had like a panic attack in my car one time. I was outside my office. I had all these deals going and I started being like, can't breathe. Like, this is really weird, right? And it was kind of like a small little anxiety attack. And at that point in time, I realized I needed more help. So leverage other people. Like, you can build your business, you can make it fun, and you don't have to lose all those little things for a long period of time, as long as you leverage and you get the right amount of help to help you with stuff. And don't be a cheap ass. Like, I wish I could tell myself this before, like, early on. Like, spend the money on an assistant, spend the money on somebody helping you cold call, spend the money on somebody helping you generate leads. Like, all that stuff will come back to you. Divvy up the work. Like, if you don't want to work with buyers, get a buyer's agent. There's tons of people that want to work with buyer's agent. If you don't want to do listings anymore, go to the appointment, take down the listing, have your team member work it, or just have them go and take it down if they can. If you are in wholesale, don't do the calls, the takedown, the dispo, and everything else yourself. That is so much work and it's not going to be that much fun. Like, do it for maybe 6 months and then figure out a different system, because that's not sustainable, right? When you do your fix and flips, don't do the work yourself. Hire it out, because your best dollar per hour is going out there and hunting down the deals, not painting a wall, right? So look at, and you can paint a wall every once in a while, but I do not allow myself to do that stuff. I'm not super handy. I'm getting a little better by choice, but a lot of people will make fun of me. And I'm like, I would rather go and make $100,000 in a month than paint this wall that's going to take me from $100,000 to $50,000 because I decided to paint the garage. You know, yep. Like, I'm literally, that's a $50,000 paint job for me to paint that garage.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And more than that too, like, think about the energy and the emotion. Emotionally, like, I would just be like, blah, every time I'm going to wake up and go do that. And I think that Dan Sullivan talks about it. Everybody has their unique ability. And he's talking about, like,
yeah,
is like, what would you wake up early for every single morning to do if that's all you had to do all day, and like stay up late for? You would miss dinner for to go do this part of your business.
Yeah.
Right. And if we all just like really thought about that, and then you spend every single day delegating everything else that isn't that, and like, yes, not of, like, that is your entrepreneurial journey, is to mm-hmm. build a team of people who do all of the things that aren't your unique ability. So all you have to do is that, then you're set for life. Then you don't have to worry about retirement, because you'll never want to retire, because all you're doing is the exact same thing, is the one thing that you love to do all the time in your business. I think that that just speaks volumes, because people are like, again, chasing a dollar amount. Oh, I want to make $1 million in income this year. It's like, okay, well, I'd be happy to make, you know, 300,000 in income this year and want to do it for the next 30 years rather than make $1 million in income this year and hate it and never take a holiday and never spend any time with family. And I think that those are two important things. And like, really quick story for me that really sent us home was listening to my mother-in-law, love her to death. She's a budget worker. Like, she works for the government here in Toronto. She works for Toronto Police Services. And the whole purpose of her 30-year career is so that she can retire with pension be like $80,000 a year for the rest of her life. And like, that's it. Like, that's the big home run, is to get the pension and the government pay you $80,000 to sit at home the rest of your life. And it's like, well, I would challenge anybody listening to this or any business owner or anything like that and go, what do you really need to have to make $80,000 a year? I could probably take off this year and make $80,000 just by having my team run things. I'm like, so why wouldn't I take a year of retirement at the age of 36 if I could? right? And like people don't think about that. They're too busy looking at the finish line as opposed to like, this is the purpose right now.
Let me ask you a couple questions, right? So how old will she be when she retires?
She'll be 55.
All right. So the average
age. We got in early. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, she did get in early. So the average age for somebody like a female is probably 80, right? You probably have good health until about mid 70s or so, right? Yep. So she's got 20 good years for retirement, right? But what about cost of living? What about other stuff? What about stuff that comes up? And most importantly, what about only having one life and sitting at that job day in, day out? You don't like it. You're constantly thinking about retirement. You're constantly thinking about like, man, it'd be really cool to do this. It'd be really cool to do that.
Yep.
And you get to the end of your life or your end of your retirement and you're like, damn, my life is, you know, three quarters of the way over. And what are the regrets that you're going to have at that point? Like that you didn't write that book, that you didn't teach, that you didn't, but that you stayed in a job so that you could get a pension. But there's so many different avenues out there to learn how to become financially independent and to put the work in and to enjoy that work. And like you said, like one of the best feelings in the world, top five for me, was the feeling you had when I was in real estate and I was going crazy, exactly like you said. Like I was willing to miss lunch, dinner. I was willing to miss stuff with my friends. I was willing to, that's all I wanted besides my wife. Like I wanted time with her. It's like, no matter what, like I needed that. And I still need that to this day. Is that time with her and now my kids. But otherwise I would, at that point in time, I would have given up everything. Like as long as I could do real estate, and that felt good. And I haven't had that for a while with anything, because I think you transition a little bit. You get to a point where you feel more secure and you're like, okay, what else is out there? I want to spend more time with my kids and I want to still run my business, but it just doesn't feel that way. And I'm okay with that. Now I'm okay with it. For a long time, I struggled with, damn, why don't I have that feeling of ambition and going after it and this and that? But it'll come back and there'll be another time, because that's always happened in my life, right? Where I've gotten really ambitious and I was the number one seller at Wells Fargo. And then I changed jobs. I went to Grand Canyon University and I was called the Golden Boy as I was number one. And now with real estate being number one, and now I'm kind of pulling back. I'm just looking. I'm like, okay, what else is out there? What else is cool? I like spending time with my kids. I still like helping other people. But your mother-in-law, unfortunately, is going to miss some of the stuff that you and I get to experience, which is pure joy and happiness through the career that we're living and we like. So, yeah. And for you and I, we understand how sad that is, right? And how much she's missing out on something, because there's a feeling of like success. There's a feeling of building something your own. There's a feeling of freedom. There's all these things that she's not going to experience. I relate that to people that don't have kids, right? And I don't know if you have kids. We didn't really get into that. So hopefully I don't offend anybody. I apologize in the beginning. If you don't have kids and you said that you don't want to, missing out on an evolution of yourself as a human being, that is the most grand, hard, most amazing thing in the world. And I would like to compare that to having your own business, because your business is a baby and it's something that you want to grow. It's something that you want to take care of, just like a kid. It's something that makes you cry. It's something that makes you happy. It's something that makes you sad. It's something that wakes you up with excitement in the morning, just like your kids do, right? And so if you don't have that, then you're missing every feeling that you can have in the world that God has given us, or the universe, however you want to say it. And you're missing out on the full human being experience, in my opinion. It's not for everybody. Some people like, you know, working for somebody else, and I'm cool with that. I just have that leadership mentality. You do too. And I mean, yeah, so cool. Good.
I think that's a great analogy too. I really like that, because I can honestly say that I avoid talking about my kid or being a father and stuff like that, simply because I genuinely don't know how to describe it to people without sounding cliche
or being
hyperbolic, you know, like,
Yeah.
It's so hard to sound so honest when it's like, oh, it's the best thing in the world. And everybody's like,
It's also like, the hardest thing in the world too.
Yeah. But it's just so hard to convey until you get there. I think it's a beautiful analogy to connect that to your business, because it's true, right? Again, it's one of the most rewarding things in the world, but it's one of the hardest things in the world. And it's just no way of explaining it to people outside of the box. Like, it's totally different.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me this. What have you implemented in your business that gave you the most surprising results that you never would have guessed?
Being an assistant. for sure. Like the amount of stuff that was taken off me that I could just go and sell and do what I enjoyed. Exactly. So if we rewind this 30 minutes, you said do what you like doing and take all that other small stuff off and your world will be amazing, right? So I did that. And I think that was one of the biggest things that has been super helpful. Transaction coordinator assistant. I think that that's probably the biggest thing.
Cool.
One thing I wish I wouldn't have done is partnered with somebody to fill that void. I wish I would have just hired that position out early on. So I want everybody to be understanding of don't partner if you can hire for something, right? Now, my coach, Tom Kroll, says you can partner with somebody if there's something that they can bring that you can never get, like a big audience, right? So Barbara Corcoran wants to partner with you or something like that, and they can bring a certain amount of audience and do that. But if it's just another agent in your market and they're like so-so and whatnot, don't partner, just hire somebody. There's all kinds of resources out there.
I would add too, like somebody who is more motivated and more connected, like you're saying, but maybe even more accomplished might be a worthwhile partner as well. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. I know for me, for example, my partner, we have a lot of the same skill sets, but the difference being is that we're both motivated people. So yeah. I know that if I'm going to be unmotivated for a day or a week or whatever, I'm going to get called out pretty friggin' quickly. And that's just kind of built into our relationship that like we are very black and white and very like, this is my expectation. This is what we said we're going to do. I got to hold you accountable to that. And we do that on a very regular basis. So in my perspective, I prefer a partner for something like that. I don't know if that's something I could hire. I'd love to know your thoughts. What do you think about that? I think it might be different too, because you are a very motivated person as well. So it might be kind of hard to explain to some people how that fits for you.
So you're saying partner with somebody if you want more accountability?
Or with somebody that you know that will hold you accountable if you think that.
Yeah.
Or if that's
so let me
back.
Let me ask you a question. Instead of giving up 30 to 40 to 50% of your company as a partnership, who could you hire to hold you accountable and do that other stuff? Who could you hire? It's a one word answer. A coach.
Oh, fair enough. Yes, yes, yes.
Then you don't give up your business and you have somebody that's going to hold you accountable on you. So I would just hire a coach if I were you. I wouldn't hire a partner at that point in time. I've done that before. I've done it 3 times. It's never worked out. I do like the idea of partnerships. So I really, really like the idea of partnerships. I think it's more fun. All of mine have not done. I mean, they've done well for a certain period of time, you know, but for the most part, you know, it wasn't as good as you think it'd be. A coach would be better.
It's interesting. That's a good perspective. And I know like Roland Frazier, who's an influencer in my space, he talks a lot about partnership, about being super clear and specific with partnerships, because to your point, like it's very easy to grow resentment because you partner with somebody, their expectation was they were going to fulfill on this and they knew this was going to be a long-term play. And they knew in 5 or 10 years, the idea was that they wouldn't have to have a hand in anything and they still owned equity. And your expectation was something different. And that's typically what breaks up partnerships. It's just a lack of clarity around that stuff. So that's interesting as well.
And I can give an example. And if that person's going to listen to this podcast, I apologize. Right now, the one that's been the hardest was somebody that had worked for me for 5 years and they were a team manager for me. And they like had my back through my toughest, best years ever. Right. So we built a really close niche bond between each other because of all the hard work we went through. Like the harder the work and the person that's next to you supporting you, the closer that bond's going to be. Right. And then we decided to partner in wholesale because I thought I could tell that she was kind of slipping in, that she wasn't super motivated, and I wanted to get that spark back out of her. I thought there'd be something that'd be pretty great come out of it. So we ended up partnering in wholesale. We did really well, but I wasn't seeing, like, for instance, we took down a couple of flips, right? Well, there's one flip that we took down, and this is when everything changed. And I thought about it this morning, actually, because I've been thinking about her. And so we take down a condo by the airport, right? And the next door neighbor, right next to her, right, their condo. So the right next has a for sale by owner sign there. Well, my partner at the time and her family, because that's who helps her, was going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth to the place and had seen that for sale by owner sign there for maybe 2 weeks. I went there once, saw the for sale by owner sign. I pulled the flyer, talked to the person, got their house under contract and made $100,000 on that. And I thought to myself, why the heck did you not do that, right? Like, why did you not pull that flyer? Why did you not talk to that person? Maybe she didn't think about it. Maybe life was really good, so she wasn't worried about the money or whatnot. I always put a pressure on myself to provide for everybody that's around me. But that's when everything fell apart, right? That's when my resentment, just like you said, started building. I felt it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I really don't want to have this feeling towards this person because they're really important to me. I really like them. But it just kept building and building and building. And then the guy I do the wholesale with now kept bringing stuff up to me like, hey, they're writing a contract and making X amount of money and not really, you know. And then so we had a meeting, had little tiny meetings, and then finally I had a big meeting and it didn't go as well and she ended up leaving. And I didn't feel like it went as bad as maybe it could have, the way I was actually feeling. I tried to be like cognizant of like her feelings and whatnot.
Yeah.
But that was a big divorce, man. And it cost me $180,000 to get out of that. And luckily I have the money to do it, buy her out and whatnot. But she wasn't justified, in my opinion, of getting that money. Like, I felt like I kind of got robbed. I let myself do that, right? Because that was my fault.
Yeah.
For putting up with it. That was my fault for getting involved with that. So that wasn't her fault. I allowed that to happen to me. But do I hold resentment? A little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, long story short, trying to give somebody a real life example of really caring for somebody, having feelings like that and being like, damn, I really wish it didn't work out like that, right?
Yeah.
And now you talk about divorce before, going to have more upfront conversations with people right away when I don't like something instead of kind of beating around the bush, which usually I'm a pretty direct person. With her, I wasn't, because I, for her, and like she had helped me with everything. She was kind of like a motherly figure or an aunt figure to me. I disregarded those feelings and it turned out to, we're good now, I think.
Yeah.
I think we're good. I mean, I've tried to keep it that way. I did get like a review email from her on like what I could have done better. And there was some stuff written in there that I was like, wow, really? I never responded because I just don't think it's going to help the situation either way.
Yeah.
But that's the negatives of partnering, right?
Yep.
So like you said, you have to talk about the divorce before the marriage.
Yep.
And you have to talk about the issues that are coming up right away when they do come up. Otherwise, it's going to turn into a crap show for you.
Absolutely.
It's scary, dude. It's very scary to have those conversations because it's your business, your friendship, your everything. And you're like, damn, do I really want to have this conversation, open up this can of worms, or should I just kick the can down the road and hopefully it changes?
Yeah.
94% of the time, it's not going to change anyway. So you might as well just have that conversation right then and there.
I think that's powerful, right? And like you're saying, it's your business. It's not your job. Is that something you just get to walk away from if it wasn't great?
Yeah.
It's like, no, this, I'm going to have to deal with this at one point. So yeah, it's definitely tough. It's definitely tough.
Blood, sweat, and tears went into that. So it was interesting.
Let's do a bit of a speed round here. I didn't realize how late it got. What would you say would be the number one thing that you would suggest to somebody who's trying to like make their first wholesale deal? They've decided that this is what they want to do, but they're still working a full-time job. What should they focus on to get that first deal with all of the friggin' information in the world?
So if you have all the information in the world, what I'd do is pull your list and just start calling people right away. And at the same time, I would spend time on acquisition of leads, like a wholesale deal, and acquisition of buyers. Because what people don't understand is they go for the wholesale deal. But then once you get the wholesale deal, you have to sell that thing. And that's the hard part, man. That's just as hard as it is to get a good wholesale deal. So spend 3 hours a day calling for the deal, spend 2 hours a day calling for the buyer's list or find the buyer's list and go to your RIAs, go to your meetups, call real estate agents that are buyer side agents, right? So if you're going to go for the top agents in town, you're going to talk to a guy like me that just runs a team, doesn't work with the buyers, but only works with listings. And that's the wrong thing to do, right? Pull the top buyer's agents and ask them for, let them know that you do wholesale and you find deals and that you would like to give those deals to their buyer's agents, right? So do that. So that's my answer, is get on the phone for 3 hours a day looking for a deal, 2 hours a day finding buyers. Pull your list.
Awesome.
That's the only way that you're going to do it.
Okay. So let's say I made a couple of deals now, not very consistent, but now I want to start like growing a team or at least taking my business to the next step where I can start consistently getting deals every month. Where would you focus at that?
So you need to get somebody that's going to be a good cold caller for you or plug in some warm leads for you. And then you need to get a dispo and acquisition manager down.
Awesome.
And that's one job in the same. You don't have to hire an acquisition manager and then hire a dispo manager. You can have your dispo manager be your, you can have that one person be your cold caller, your disposition manager, and your acquisition manager if you're paying them the right way. As soon as they get too busy, then you separate those jobs. That person keeps two jobs, the other person will get another one, or you find another job for, yeah, that's what I do.
Awesome.
I know that's going to sound a little scattered, but...
It makes sense, though, and I think that that's what people miss, is that everybody looks at things as silos, like, oh, do I need a cold caller, or do I need an acquisitions manager, or a dispo, and like, what you're saying is the answer is yes. Like, go hire somebody and start train them on what you hate doing most first, and then like, wear multiple hats because you're just starting out, then so be it. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, 100%.
So now if somebody decided, okay, they've got a small team and they decide like they want to make this a 7-figure per year business, where would you be focused on at that point if you're really trying to scale?
You're going to have to, depending on how big, what area you're at, like that's kind of a loaded question for the most part because there's so many different variables. But what you need to do is, just like you said earlier on, is you have to have a lot of cold callers going for you. You have to have acquisition managers and dispo managers, and you need to be following up on the hot leads. Like any of those hot, like if you want to work your business and work in your business, you have to be the one taking on those hot leads and getting them to sign contracts and being on top of that. And I think that's where you go, and I've done this before, right? I made millions of dollars per year for 5 years in a row, so I know how to run a 7-figure business, right? What you have to do is you hire those cold callers, you hire your disposition and acquisition manager, but any hot leads you're taking down. You're the one, you're not giving your dinner away. Your dinner is sitting at in front of you and you're eating that dinner until you feel comfortable enough to train somebody else to prepare your dinner and eat that dinner. And then that's a bad analogy, but until you can train somebody else to take over that position, and then you're overseeing it. But that's the first thing that you want to do is hire more cold callers, get an acquisition manager or two with a dispo manager involved, and then you're taking down all those hot leads until you feel comfortable giving those away at that point in time. And then you have to do cold calling, you have to do texting, and you have to do mailing, right? And these are not shotgun approaches. You have to sniper these in. So you have to take all the data from what you've learned in all these years of doing your business to get it to a 7-figure business. Let me rewind. You need to document every single thing that you're going to do, that you're doing from the beginning, on what's working, what's not working, what you like, what you don't like, and write all that down. Build a course out for yourself and for your team members, which is something I did not do. And it's something I'm kicking myself for. So now you gotta go scrape the memory bank, right, for all that stuff. Then once you get to that point and you take all that down, then you can work outside of your business and just oversee it all. And I know people that do that and they do really well at it. You're basically just changing hats, and it's not like kick back and hopefully make a bunch of money at that point.
Yeah.
You're still going to work your business. It's just going to be a different role. That's the way I'd go about it. You have to add all three levels. You're calling, you're texting, your mail, more acquisition managers, and you take down the hot leads until you're ready to move out of that position and hire somebody else. So
awesome. And finally, James, so simple.
Yeah.
And finally, where would anybody go if they wanted to get in contact with you?
So I like Facebook, like just message me on Facebook. It's James Michener, JamesMichener. And or go to, and you can watch my YouTube videos, Financial Free Realtor. Instagram is JamesMichener03 on Instagram.
Awesome.
And I'm happy to answer any questions. I'll email you back and forth. I'll jump on a quick call if they're interested in coaching or just need some little advice, 15 minutes or so.
And what do you specifically coach on?
So I coach real estate agents on how to build their business to get to financial freedom, and how to add those other tools into their tool belt, such as the wholesale, the fix and flip, the buy and holds, and being able to lend money, because I do think that that's important to have an understanding of all that. That way, when the appropriate situation comes through, instead of making 3% on a deal, you can make 10% on a deal. And instead of passing up a good rental opportunity, you're taking that rental opportunity yourself. If somebody needs you to loan money at $50,000 on a $300,000 house and you get first position on that, you loan them the $50,000 at 15% or 10 to 15%, you go first lien position, and you make money on the money that would be just sitting in the bank earning 2 to 3%. So there's so much. It's amazing. It's what Instagram, Facebook, you can watch my YouTube videos as well.
Great. Well, James, this was an absolute pleasure. Super excited. We should definitely do a round two. We can go deeper into what you're specifically coaching on. I think that'll be super, super helpful for a lot of people. But otherwise, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you coming on.
Cool. Thanks, Jeff.
I just wanted to chime in one more time here to mention that we also give away free leads every single week from my agency, LeadZolo. And it's very simple. All you have to do is sign up to our email list. And once or twice a week, what we do is we just offer free leads out to everybody on the list. It's very simple. And the first person to respond gets the lead. So if you go to freewholesaleleads.com, you can sign up to be a part of this list and literally just get free leads every week. It costs you absolutely $0 and you get some of the hottest, highest converting leads possible. And I'll text them directly to you and you can start making deals with zero money out of pocket. That's freewholesaleleads.com. freewholesaleleads.com.